Sean Graham, live from Brisbane, hydrating well, keeping the moustache moist. How are you?
I'm very well. Yeah, I am trying to keep hydrated. Well, you were here a few weeks ago. You know what it's like. It's muggy, we say. Very muggy.
Muggy. I was like doing a lot. I just have to wear a long sleeve top because I want to keep out of the UV, then it makes me even muggier. And a hat, so it makes me. I'm definitely finding it pretty tough. We were just talking about the 7-minute carousel stuff that we did, and it's probably the hardest hour of my life.
I saw you're on the grass getting involved. I actually watched a bit of footage back and I saw a couple of cutout passes.
Yeah, off my
You
right
rate
arm.
yourself as a what were you, a ball playing back rower? Is that right?
Probably a ball playing back row. If I had my time again, I would have been a 12. I think I would have been more effective at 12. Got a decent kick game if I need it. You might have seen some of my kicks as well on the footage. I'm not sure if they were edited out for being too naughty or not.
Both feet you can
Can kick both feet, yeah. What about you? How would you describe yourself as a player and as a coach? Let's do both.
Well, not too dissimilar to you with the playing. I was a back up until I wasn't growing and I was too slow, so then I'm sort of hit in the back row through my adolescent years. So it was like a 10, 15 up until 13, then yeah, moved into the forwards. Very late developer, so my rugby was stalled through high school really, and then kicked off again when I had a good hit of testosterone in my late teens, and then started playing some decent footy through Colts. And yeah, and I was kind of on the cusp of giving it a proper crack, and I don't know, I finished school, started uni, and then that's when I fell in love with coaching. Started coaching one of my little brothers' club teams, and as a lot of people do here in Australia, you often go back to the school that you went to and do a little bit of coaching. And you know, I coached the under 13 Fs, was the first team I coached, and I just loved it. And actually, when I talk about my coaching journey, I think it does stem back to my childhood. So I'm one of six, five boys in the family, three younger brothers, and we grew up next to a park in the sort of inner or outer northern suburbs of Brisbane, and just played every day just in the park. And I felt like I was always, I loved the challenge of teaching my little brothers how to do things, jumping on bikes, how to do a backflip on a trampoline, how to ride a bike without training wheels. So I reckon that's maybe where my love of coaching and inspiring, motivating, challenging comes from, maybe.
Man, that's a cool story. Six of you, that's pretty wild, eh?
Pretty rare now to have six. Like we had the minivan, and then we had a really cool neighborhood. So we were able to get a game pretty good. So in summer, we'd play cricket, winter, rugby, and you know, 3v3, 4v4, 5v5. Take the mower over, mow out the pitch in summer, and then the outfield, oh, the outlines of the rugby pitch in winter. That's how we rolled.
I just imagine how excited you would be to find other households with six members in and then be able to mow a perfect pitch for 6v6. And you also reminded me of we spoke to Conrad Smith after the 2015 World Cup when we did the World's Best Project, and we spoke to some of the best players in the world and asked them about their developmental experiences. And Conrad Smith basically played touch in the playground, in the park with his mates 3 times a day for a decade, and probably helped.
Oh, absolutely. I think people ask me the question around, you know, what can you remember coaching, you know, through my juniors? And really, you played club footy up until I went to high school, and you trained for 1 hour a week. And I look back at that training, and I stood behind a marker with a dad holding a hit shield, and we would run, and you'd run up and smash into the hit shield, go to ground, or you know, and then you go to the back of the line, and that's all I can think about. So it didn't really, all my development was, yeah, just we just learned through doing and trial and error. I can kick both feet. I remember I had a broken toe, my right toe. It was broken for a period. So, we just played every day. So I just had to kick with my left foot. That's how I learned how to kick with my left foot. Because we just always had our hands on the footy.
Grown-ups can't hold hit shields in the UK, so you wouldn't be stood behind a cone with a grown-up holding a hit shield. So there's a positive for you. I do like the thought of breaking kids' toes on their dominant foot just to make sure they became good with their non-dominant foot. It's interesting. There's a kid this week who's playing football and only using one foot. And if Fletcher's listening now, he'll be. I was getting quite aggro about this. So he's in a football academy and he's 13 and he can only use one foot. And lots of people say to me, "Oh, that's fine," and I don't think it is fine, because again, depends how important we think skill is. I did say to the kid, if I came back next year, if me and Fletch came back next year and we offered you £1 million to be right-footed, do you think your training would be different? And he went, yeah. And I was like, you might want to imagine we're coming back with £1 million. It's good. It's a good thought experiment, isn't it? That every kid at, you know, whatever age it was you broke your toe, that in 12 months' time you have to be, instead of being right-footed, you have to be left-footed.
Oh, and I think I have to give my dad some credit. Like back in those early days when we did have a kick at the park, he would always say, "And your other foot, and your other foot." So it was just, yeah, it was. And you know, back then I was playing a bit of 10, so I could kind of kick both feet. But it, yeah, definitely accelerated when I was forced to only kick with that foot.
And when you talk about the coaching, like how do you think the kids would describe you at Nudgee? What would be the two or three words you would either want or you think they would say? Apart from moustached.
It's a good question. I think that's probably changed and maybe adaptable, I hope. I try to listen. I listen to them. I ask a lot of questions. So a question I've been asking them a lot is, are you excited about coming to training? And I've been asking my coaches to ask the players that. And then I think I like that word excitement because there's a few layers to it. You know, we talk a lot about fun and what is fun and what's in a session. But if you're excited, I think it means that you're getting challenged. It's enjoyable. It's a safe environment, but there's a little bit more to it than just, yeah. So the excitement, I hope that maybe they describe me as being a lot. But yeah, I think, and I go back to that very first experience of coaching the under 13 Fs back when I was, you know, 18, and I said I loved it. Like it was, I really enjoyed it. So I always just keep thinking to myself, I need to be excited about going to training. And you know, there can be big weeks back into the season, whatever. But if you're turning up to training and you're excited about it, well then that's going to rub off on your players. If you're dreading going to practice as the coach, well we've got a problem. We've got a big problem.
I love that question. Yeah, sometimes I'm thinking, and it's Sunday morning in England now, and there'll be mums and dads around the country who aren't that excited about going to rugby, possibly because there's a game and they know they're going to get smashed or there's going to be some poor parent behaviour. And of course, there'll be lots that are as well. So I think it's a great question. Have you always been like that? Because you just also reminded me, and we will get on to Nudgee in a second, but... I was with Pete Sturgis this week and he's a football and a futsal coach and he's renowned as one of the best. Like people say he's like the man. And I'm calling him the award-winning Pete Sturgis at the moment. And he said he was doing a session, I don't know how long ago it was, like he's older than me now, so it might have been like 30 years ago. And he said this little kid just changed his life. He came up to him and tugged on Pete's shirt and went, Pete, this session's boring. And he said, like, completely changed him from that day onwards. But it sounds like have you always thought like this?
Oh, I don't think so. I think over the years, when you first start coaching, and regardless of what your intentions are, there's an ego attached to it. And I remember hearing early on, it was like, what's this about? And if you think deep about that question, who is this about? And it's like, oh, is this about me? And like, I'm using my players. But this is actually ultimately about me. And so like, if when you're reflecting on a loss and you're like, if you're feeling upset just for yourself, then you think, oh, okay, this is maybe not quite right. Like if you're obviously feeling upset for the players, then that's a little bit different. I think shifting that focus around what am I actually trying to achieve when I'm coaching? And when it's genuinely about your players, and doing things for them, that it completely just changes your mindset with everything. So, like as an example, last year at the start of the preseason, I was just thinking to the well, if I know I'm a 15, it was under 15s. They're coming down from school. They've been in class all day. Like, what would they want straight up? And for me, it's like what I think they want may be different. So you've got to ask them. So that we have music on, all the balls out. I'm getting around again, building connections. Everyone talks about the importance of building those relationships. And so it's being really purposeful in that space. Music on, balls out, boys passing, kicking around, just giving them some time to just be a kid. I'm having interactions, trying to talk not about rugby, about other things in their life. And then we're good now, boys. And then we come in and then we can start training. But even still, constantly asking them, is this what you want to include in training? And the music thing, I was thinking of, oh, do I really want the music? I said, do you guys want the music? Yep, the music's fine. Okay, what sort of music? So one of the injured boys would be the DJ, and so I got this big boom box, and it was just a really nice, again, it was exciting. It was a really cool buzz. So I think certainly in recent years, I've been really challenging myself to just put myself in the shoes of the players. And we see around us sport and youth sport and on a bigger scale, and the decline in participation of youth sport. And there's all different reasons as to why. But if we're talking about what can we do in our own environment as well, make sure that we're providing a really cool experience for the kids that are in front of us. How do we do that? Ask them. And then work with them, constantly reflect. That's probably been a big thing as well. I like the idea of reflecting on everything in the moment. So that can be when you're driving home, you might have you've got that interior monologue going on saying, oh, what, maybe I shouldn't have said that, or was I consistent in my emotional response to something today, even though I've had a tough day, all that sort of stuff. But then just having conversations with the players after training, with your coaches, and genuine and not honest conversations as well, making sure that we're not just constantly patting each other on the back saying how good practice was. So, yeah, what could we do better? What does that look like? Okay, how are we going to try that? And then of course, making sure that we actually do it.
Nice. You triggered me on someone said to me the other day, who owns the knowledge? And often we think we own all the knowledge. And then I was also thinking about how excited co-coaches must be to co-coach with you because the boom box is out and they are reflecting deeply with you every single session. I guess that'll lead us in to nudge you really like and then you run a rugby program, so I guess one of your other challenges is influencing and supporting other coaches who are, some of whom are teachers, some of whom are coaches. And I guess that's maybe one of the reasons you decided to get about 300 people together in one place at your college, in January.
Yeah, so I guess first and foremost, my main role here is the rugby director, and it's a big rugby program. We have just over 800 boys at the school play rugby, so that's 40 rugby teams. We have two coaches on every team, so that's 80 coaches plus some specialist coaches and age coordinators. So we've got a program with, you know, around 100 staff. Now, where are these coaches coming from? So they teach at the school, they're old boys, external coaches. Some are really very much like a semi-professional standard coach, and then others are very much mums and dads, volunteers, or young old boys who are coming back to give back to the school. So yeah, how am I supporting these coaches in their coaching journey? How can I be impactful, knowing that I need to have different expectations for these coaches? And also, when you're down to your 98th coach who needs to be available to get to school at 3 o'clock or at 6:30 in the morning, you can't be too picky. So we need to be, yeah, making sure that we are getting the right people in front of these boys. But then, yeah, how are we supporting them? And that's an ongoing challenge, which is, yeah, why I started the forum. I think it's kind of includes all of that. What is best practice with coach education? You can do coach inductions. It's just like our players, coaches learn differently. So if we have one way we think is going to help our coaches, that may not work for other coaches. And yeah, so I'm on a bit of a journey with this coach ed space, and trying to find ways to be as impactful as possible and as efficient as possible, knowing that you don't have a lot of time if you've got to divide it up between 100 coaches. So how do you do it? So it's yeah, it's been fun. And then of course the forum, probably I think looking at my own journey at Nudgee, I've been at Nudgee for 10 years, and I think I've noticed in the last sort of 5 years a decline. We're pretty lucky at Nudgee; we've been maintaining our numbers, but certainly other schools' numbers are dropping, and sort of hearing that there's a bit of a trend with participation numbers. So what can we be doing on a broader scale to help our coaches? Because ultimately the coach is the number one contributing factor to that experience of the player. So we need to be helping our coaches, giving them some tools, some resources to help them on their journey. And obviously we can do that within Nudgee, but then with the broader rugby community. So yeah, third year in. And there's obviously there's a bit of a gap in the market and an appetite for it, because this year's one sold out within a few weeks. Once I announced you on the lineup,
It definitely wasn't me, by the way.
it
It's
sold out. And
definitely
then,
some of the super
yeah.
rugby coaches.
And then we had a wait list, people wanting to get on. It's that everyone wants something they can't have. So once we said it was sold out, then I had all these old friends ringing me up. Hey, how do I get on the forum? Oh, I missed out on a ticket. So we had about 100 that missed out, which was a shame, but kind of, yeah, a bit of an indicator of what the potential could be.
And were you excited about it? I mean, in advance, I know you've obviously put a lot of work putting it together. Like, were you excited turning up to the conference?
I was this year. Like the first year it's a bit of an unknown how it's all going to come together. And then the second year, kind of going in and out of a bit of COVID restrictions. Last year we were all good. And then this year we just kind of broke through that interstate, and then even further abroad. We had a few coaches come over from the States, quite a few from New Zealand, even a guy from Sweden. So yeah, we're just kind of breaking into that broader market, which it excites me. I think for me, the actual process of putting the program together, I get a lot of learnings out of that. So obviously meeting people like yourself, having Zooms, picking their brain about, you know, what they do in this world, and sharing ideas. That process in itself is really cool.
Well, let's start looking ahead to 2025. We'll talk about the conference in a bit, but like, what's your reflections? So, what's the two or three things you were most proud of? And then, if you would go, oh, if I had a replay, here's a couple of things I would do differently.
Yeah, I think so. The big thing leading into this forum was I wanted it to be as impactful as possible. Like, and I keep saying, if you turn up to a coach professional development session, like, good on you. Like, you're putting your head up and saying, oh, I want to get better, so I want to put some time into my craft. So being there is better than not being there, yes. But then the next stage is, okay, we've got these coaches, they've given up their weekend, they're here with us, they're learning lots, but how can we then take it one step further and make sure that we're supporting them so some of this stuff actually sticks and they can apply it to their coaching practice tomorrow? And so we really wanted to set the scene on the Friday night with laying a little bit of a framework for the attendees and give them some time to really think about why they're there. And so they've got some really, they're really purposeful in their approach when they're listening to different things. And you need to be thinking, okay, what am I actually trying to get out of this session? And be really deliberate with that. You know, we always say we're all responsible for the outcome of a learning experience. And you don't want to leave someone and go, oh, I've got nothing out of that. Well, mate, that's on you. So, yeah, trying to provide a little bit of a framework. So, and there was a little bit of, I guess, science in, you know, how you actually learn and how you can ensure things will stay in your short and long term and working memory. And then just making sure that we get really good presenters and making sure that presenters are kind of aligned in a way. It doesn't necessarily all need to be aligned. I think it's important that we've got coaches that are, and presenters that are throwing things out and getting people talking, and it can be a little bit controversial. There was a guy, John Quinn, who came over from New Zealand and presented on the Friday night, and everyone was talking about his presentation because he made some really bold statements, and it sort of created some robust conversations throughout the weekend. Things like school sports programs should never have high performance attached to it. I think, oh, okay, that challenged me a little bit. So his whole presentation was on creating high care environments and prioritizing that world. So, you know, and then some people would say, oh, you could be high care and high performance. And he said, well, you could be, but in my opinion. And so it was, yeah, certainly getting that combination of presenters. The program, I think, flowed pretty well. Obviously, it was very hot, so we tried to stay off the field in the middle part of the day and get back into the auditorium where the air conditioning was, and did it something a little bit different on that Saturday morning where, as you mentioned earlier, we had all the coaches down on field and we just did a little 7-minute quick fire, give it a go, something that you can use at any level, requires very little equipment, mod games, using pool noodles and skill ACK. I did a little spark up, counting up fingers games. So I think I would, if I had my time again, I'd definitely include maybe another rotation of that. And then I think moving forward, the next stage of this is trying to find a way where coaches can actually coach and then get some feedback on their coaching. So that's probably the next stage. And that's obviously challenging when there's so many 300 coaches. You know, what does that look like? But if you're in groups and, you know, peer reviewing and things like that, I'm sure there's a way.
Yeah, maybe then like 300 sign up, but 50 sign up to be like active coaches, and another 50 sign up to be like heads of coaching, and they're going to be the ones that are observing and giving feedback, and they have a head of coaching support them. Mate, it's good this because we're planning next year already. Some of the stuff you've mentioned, but I was thinking about the stuff that I thought was impactful. One was referencing learning from the start. Second was the carousels. Again, I think I would carousel individual skills, meeting skills, bit like you did, like spark ups, like all the requirements that the coaches have to do. I would probably carousel a deselection conversation. I would carousel all the bits that we, you know, an interaction with a parent. Then I just put options. People had options, didn't they, around what they went to see. There was some big picture stuff. I loved Quinny. Mate just throws grenades, and they just leave some ripples, don't they? If you're using high performance, you're doing child abuse. Like, there we go. That's that's going to leave a few ripples for some people to make sense of. I wrote the time in between. Like, actually, that's often some of the best stuff, isn't it? And I thought that was pretty cool. And actually, the interactions, I was pleased because obviously I felt like I was giving James O'Connor a hard time. But people said afterwards that he changed his presentation and it became a bit more interactive. But generally, you had presenters who were interactive. And then I wrote, well, the fact that it was 2 days. So we had an evening together and we were staying in dormitories, and when people imagine dormitories, it won't be like the dormitories that we stayed in. So
I think that's probably the best part now is not only we have the attendees, we had nearly 100 stay on site, but a lot of the coaches, particularly the presenters that had traveled, all stayed on site as well. So it just created this really cool environment where the attendees are getting access to our presenters, at breakfast. Hey, I listened to your Q&A. You're on that panel last night. Let's talk a little bit more about that. Like to sit down and be able to have breakfast with Aaron Webb from the Crusaders or Kane Drury from the Highlanders, and what are you doing with it? That's for me. That's the vision. That's the vision. Is it's global. You're sitting around and connecting with coaches from all over the world, and there's obviously a program, but then there's a lot of organic gold nuggets being shared through. Yeah, and I think putting some structure in those maybe different groups that you spoke about earlier, head coaches and things like that. The feedback I'm getting is because we talk about youth, so it's called the Youth Rugby Coaches Forum. Now, even in that space of youth, we had a lot of coaches in the junior space, really like under 10s and younger. And then we've got guys and girls coaching men's and super academies and things like that. So a little bit maybe more choice within that youth age group and targeting certain ages within youth.
Again, that was my other reflection. So I put more action, even more carousel, but like different options around the carousel. And then just that, and I know we chatted about it beforehand, but just that translation piece of if we see Laurie Fisher coach breakdown, then we actually need to go, okay, Laurie, now you're coaching it with the under nines. You're coaching it with the mighty under 13F team. And there's a couple of kids that are really scared of contact. And by the way, the coaches of the A, B, C, D's, and E's, they've taken up most of the pitch, so you have the in-goal area to coach it in. Those are the realities of coaching, aren't they?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And then what does that look like? Do we put some coaches on the spot with that planning? This is the scenario. So that scenario-based learning, you're coaching the 13Fs, you've got one ball, you've got no markers, and you've got 25 players. What are you going to do? Oh, and by the way, or just keep throwing things at you, just keep stretching. Because that was probably other feedback. Some people probably didn't feel stretched enough. Others were too stretched. So, yeah, that's why we provided those three time slots with the choice, one of nine choices they could choose from. But yeah, I think anytime we're presenting to the whole group, I think those, and I think we got it pretty well right. If you think about the Friday night with Wilkie and John Quinn, that were more around the why, which I think that you're really, I think you were impressed that I thought about including that. It wasn't just technical, tactical. This is how you line out lift. This is how you scrummage. This is how you do a breakdown drill. It's actually, this is how players want to be spoken to, or this is how they like receiving their feedback. This is actually how you learn. Have you thought about this? But yeah, I really like that one. I've been talking about it in the office a little bit. And we're really unfortunate. One of the presenters that I know that you know well, Rachel Vickery, she fell unwell, so she unfortunately wasn't able to present. But she was going to talk in that space around those difficult conversations. And I know that you have some cool ideas around role playing some of that. And I've spoken about that in our office. And there's a real skill in
But
that.
when
And
you speak about it in the office, do people like cross their arms and get stressed by your conversation with them, or are they okay
no,
about
they're fascinating because, I don't think everyone's like, yeah, when you think about it,
it?
you have these conversations and they're full on, like it's intense, but no one's ever kind of given you any strategies or anything. You just learn by doing, and you've got to go through these experiences. Like, oh, I had this really tricky conversation with a co-coach or a player or a parent. So it's like, well, let's actually share these experiences and what's worked for you. And okay, that would be because everyone's going to face it at some point in time. And if we can, and I always say, people always talk to me about, oh, how are the parents? And I said, look, at the end of the day, all parents have the best intentions for their kids. I have no doubt about that. Like, but what actually happens is some parents, and I know I'm a parent, I'm going through this journey. Like, you're just doing what you think's best for your son or daughter. And based on what? Like, based on maybe how you were parented, or, but if you're not actually in this world, you can be doing things that are really harmful. And you need, so we have a responsibility to educate our parents, but you need to know how to do that and do it in the right way, where it's not condescending, it's coming from a good place. And if you can manage those interactions with parents, you can manage those interactions with your co-coaches and then with players, then yeah, you can get some really good outcomes.
Yeah, I think the parents bit's probably a one to add, and then I was just thinking there about like on the panel with between like Zane Hilton, who was excellent, and James O'Connor, like they'd had a challenging conversation in training that day at the Reds, and even just to hear how that had played out a little bit, and then to actually, I think I asked James a bit around like it sounds like he's doing a bit more stuff around coaching and he's getting a bit more involvement in running meetings and stuff. And he's like, oh, I'm learning so much stuff. And I'm always thinking, yeah, so much stuff that 10 years ago would have been really helpful for you. Like he talked about, didn't he, about, oh, I'm just getting better at asking questions. All right, that's pretty cool. That's probably would help you as a player as well. Same for me. I would have benefited from understanding how to have a challenging conversation with Andy Robinson at Bath or John Callard at Bath. And no one gave me the skills to do it, and they were the adults, and they probably might have thought about that, but they didn't. And yeah, it's like.
I listen. I remember, and often these challenging conversations can be around selection. So I've heard a couple of really good examples of that where, you almost go into the meeting and you ask the player for permission as to, what sort of conversation that they want to have. And they might start with, how's your day going? Are you in a, you're okay at the moment? And okay, cool. So you're not playing this week. Did you want to have a conversation now? You want some feedback? Do you want some time to digest that? Okay, let's have a conversation now. Okay, cool. So on a scale of 1 to 5, 5 being really honest, 1 maybe being let's sugarcoat things. What? How do you want me to provide this feedback or information to? Give it to me. 5. Great. Okay, this is what we need to fix. Even just little things like that. And I've even heard, like, if you're having a tricky one, maybe with a parent, you go in there with a pen and a notepad, and just jot down what they're talking about, and then you can retell them what they've said. And sometimes they'll, oh, no, that's not what I meant. Oh, that's what you said. That's what we're talking about. And then it's, yeah, just little strategies, I think, to put in place just to make sure that you can stay composed. And we ask our players to do this, staying composed under pressure. How are we doing that, and how are we role playing that as a coach? Like, oh, that's a, I'm really challenged by that on pitch side game days, and I've got better. But you just think, you want to be, what do they say, like the duck? You're just all chilled on top of the water, but underneath, you're going crazy, just trying to hide your emotions as best you can. I guess probably one step further would be not having to hide your emotions, actually being. Genuinely being in fully in control of your emotions, even when you're fully under the pump.
So much stuff there that I'm just going to mention. So I was just speaking to a coach before you who I work with, and he's got to have a challenging conversation with a player. And he just said, I'm going to start out with, like, what type of relationship do you want to have with me? Like, do you want to have the one where we're pink and fluffy and we probably don't say the things we need to say and you don't become an All Black? Or do you want to have like a relationship where I think that's a great question. The one you said there about the pen and the paper, I work with a coach who he used to do his Monday morning meetings with the his owning his meetings with the owners on a Monday morning because it gave him 2 days to think about it, and he also would have a pen and a paper. And sometimes what you said, so again, we were just with the Premier League last week, and I heard some stuff that was around some of the experiences of players and some of the stuff that's been said to them that blew my mind. But sometimes just going back to someone going, sorry, could you just repeat what you said? They then realize how ridiculous it is what they just said because they weren't thinking at the time. Then you also, what else did I write about? Yeah, so like that pitch line thing, again, we just explored it last week. And one of the things we challenged the coaches to think about is how can you coach in the future when you're coaching on a match day instead of being in the present? One of the things that was really obvious was that when you're in the present and you're getting quite emotional and it narrows your focus, you might be missing pre-morteming what's going to happen in the next 15 seconds, 1 minute, 3 minutes. And so they actually went, oh, it's much easier, Rusty, just to sit down, chill out a bit, then I can coach in the future. It kind of makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, even that's really interesting. I've started doing being a bit more deliberate, like leading into halftime, particularly if you've got a co-coach, making sure that you have a plan, who's going to talk about what, and just a little conversation a few minutes before halftime. Because how often do you see, two coaches charged up and they both go in and sort of say the same thing, but it almost contradicts each they contradict each other, and there's just too many messages. And as we all know, there's obviously less is more. We all talk about that at half time, but even being aligned, and or sometimes it's like, you know what, I'm not going to speak, you speak.
Right,
Or let's
there needs to be a carousel on delivering half times.
I like it.
We just again, we just spent a bit of time on that. Even just thinking about what's the first thing he's going to say and what's the last. And I remember
Yeah.
sitting with a football coach on the side of the pitch and be like, "Well, it's 2 minutes to half time." He's like, "Yeah, I know." I'm like, "Are you going to speak to the other coach about anything? Are you going to like, who's the person you need to influence the most? Like, what's the first thing you're going to say? Like, going to discuss any of this stuff?" Because again, my experience is that head coach speaks first, then assistant, and then if there's another coach, they've got to speak, but there's nothing left to say. It's quite challenging being the third coach in that situation. Oh man, we're
What's the best halftime speech you've ever heard, or what's something that you've seen that's been really powerful?
what's yours? I know mine. I don't even have to think about it.
Well, actually, something that comes to mind is we talk about saving some bullets. So I've worked with some coaches, and session one pre-season, and it's they've heard everything and gone off crazy yelling, screaming and all that. So then from then on, it's just noise. There's no impact. So you just got to save, maybe you got to save that time where you maybe do need to raise your voice, just so the boys or the girls are, oh, okay, yep. And then there's a coach, Jared Alexander, who coached our first 15. He's a great guy. He's retired. I'm hoping he's going to coach back this year. But he's very calm. Talk about composed and having difficult conversations with players. Just unbelievable. I've learned so much from him. And at half time, and even watching the games, just you wouldn't see any emotion, just very in control. And then I remember it was a half time. We were down and th things, there was a couple of yellow cards, just, poor discipline, things like that. And one of the players, just eyes were wandering, or trying to talk to a physio, and it was any sort of raised his voice. It was just like, I need everybody's eyes on me now. And I still remember it because like he just never did that. But it was like, wow, this is, and it wasn't even yelling. It was just more of a, ooh, okay. And I got a bit like, oof, okay, yep, we're on here. And it was, yeah, razor focus. This is the messaging. One or two really clear points, and they ran out and got the job done. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. What's yours?
Well, just to precede it, I've started going and watching more coaches on match day first, because I probably see their some of their less helpful behaviors, but also the game judges your training. So we see some stuff. And then I sat in a review of a game with a football coach recently, and he said, oh, so he said, everyone, just remember what we said at half time. And of course, like they just start throwing stuff out and they just couldn't remember because it wasn't actually that memorable and it might have been way too much information and all of that. So I think, me and you will have both experienced hundreds, thousands of half times, like, and pre-matches and debriefs, and I could probably list a small number that I think was super, super impactful. Ben Ryan, 2009, we were away in the Wellington Sevens. We were 19-7 down at half time, I think. And I think you can watch it online, actually. And my memory of it is this. that I went in that huddle thinking we were going to lose, and I left it thinking we were going to win. So he just started with, look, we have every single excuse not to win this game, like jet lag and da 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 and da 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 and da da da. However, it's going to be amazing when we win it. Like, and suddenly I was like, oh, geez, we're going to win it. Like, I didn't think we were going to win it. I wasn't even a player. I was like a coach. I just think that ability, just like took us into the future. And then probably like, that imagine what it's going to be like when we're on the podium with the trophy. No one thinks we're going to have won it. We've had every single excuse not to win it. And probably this is how we're going to win it. I remember walking back and saying to, I think Will Bealy, the team manager, we're going to win this. And we won it. Like it was, yeah, so that's the one for me. And it definitely wasn't a shouty one. I often do a bit of stuff with coaches and I'll show them the Mike Bassett 3-0 down to the Mexicans at half time, like smashing the table. And again, we can often, I think what you said, we often don't create time to think slow to then think fast. So we don't like plan. I'm not saying plan at half times, but at least have a bit of some options and some frameworks and, maybe reflect upon how often we practice our half times. So we had coaches at SGP this week, like practicing meetings, practicing half times, getting feedback from other people on it. Like that would be, well, it just doesn't exist in their world. And then the last thing, sorry. So we had analysts this week with us as well, and they work in the clubs and they analyse players and coaches. And I asked them to what percentage of kind of a zero or a five. What percentage of your analysis is around coaches on match days? And it was 1% because they couldn't say zero. I think it's a under investigated part of coaching.
I definitely agree. I know, and I often say if I wander around and watch warm-ups, I get a pretty good indication of how the team's going to go. And what I mean by that is I actually don't really care what is included in the warm-ups. It's just more around body language, their energy, their focus, and sometimes this can be too much. Like I'm watching kids like already playing a game before they'd run out, and others that are just sort of building what I would say nicely and keeping emotions intact. But I like to talk about, what do I say? I say composed yet ruthless through prep into game. Going back to what you were saying with Ben Ryan, I love that. Like when I spoke about my first like coaching experience and my little brothers in the park, like I think there's a lot in, it's almost trickery. And with kids, you can make them believe some unbelievable stuff. And through, like I'll hopefully none of them are listening, but I'll say things to the kids like, no one's training anywhere near as hard as you guys. No one, no way. So look, no one can train as hard as you boys have trained. No one's putting the same amount of effort. No one deserves this more. And they're just same sort of thing. I remember I gave it sort of a halftime talk, and it was a bit like that where it was a carnival, and it was the last game of the carnival. We had this really good run, and you could see the boys were off their feet. It was like an under-12s team, and they were done. Like they're done. I could tell a few of the key players had put the cue on the rack, and I said, boys. I'm probably going to head over and just tell them we've had enough. We're just like it's. I can see you guys have, everyone's happy with where we're at. We've decided, this is pretty good where we've got to. We've made the grand final, but we don't really. We've given up. So I'm just going to let them know that we'll just call it down. We've got the ref to call it off. And actually got up. No, what are you doing? I said, well, are we gonna have a crack here, or have we decided that we're okay with sort of losing this game? Like I don't care if we win or lose, but let's make sure we have no regrets. Went down that path, and it was like an intercept try on full time, and we won it. And it was like one of those ones where you can, and we had no right to win the game. I don't think. I remember the team that were playing on paper. I think we're a bit more fancy than us. But yeah, I love that. Different ways to inspire and understanding your players and the personalities that are in front of you to know what makes them tick. It's really important because they're all different. Some of them do need, those honest conversations. Others need you to be a mentor, and really the rugby stuff's not even important.
Yeah,
And understanding that is hard. Well, it's not hard. It's just you've got to put the time into it, and you've got to value it.
well, shout out to the football coaches we had this week because they basically had half an hour of the kids before the tournament started, so they had to make some decisions around where they started with the kids, what type of questions they asked them, what type of stuff they found out, whether they went to meet them or whether they allowed the kids to come to them. And yeah, how they built a way of playing together, and how they found out how people wanted feedback, and it was pretty special kind of 5 days. My brain hurts. Nudgee 2025. Tell me, like, what's it going to be like before you take it global? 2026.
Oh, what, so the next forum
Yeah,
or
what are you
the
thinking now? Like, I know we chatted a bit about it, and you've had some feedback. And what's your kind of hot view on how it's going to be even better next year? By the way, it was pretty cool this year.
yeah, look, I think the more diverse the coaches in the room are, the opportunities are endless, eh? Like, because that's what it's about. Like, when I first came up with this idea, I actually wasn't picturing, necessarily professional, well-known coaches in rooms. It was more around, I want to know what a guy in South Africa who's doing some really cool stuff with his under 15s team, I want to know what he's doing. And I want him to share that with us. I want to know what a coach down in Sydney's doing, because at the moment we're all just working, worrying about our own backyards, and we've all got the same challenges, all this stuff. I went over to New Zealand at the start of last year, and I went to a school, and all they wanted to talk to me about was how I manage my parents. They just said that's, and I just said, I don't spend much time on that at all. And then they said, how? I said, because I've got systems in place. I'm proactive, knowing what some of the questions could be as we're heading into different times in the season around selection. Why would certain boys be doing this and not that, and what's available to everyone, and just over communicating everything. So, to have that, again, some of that stuff with the carousels around parent conversations, halftime talks. Yeah, there's so many things that we could do. But I think, yeah, the diversity of coaches in the room, and just probably including more coaches that are coaching in the youth space to make it as relevant as possible. I think, like, obviously, I think people see names. It's like you run a music festival, which I think I told you, I used to run a music festival. And people go to these events because they see a name, a big name of an artist.
Because Laurie Fisher's Bruce Springsteen.
Absolutely. And so, but as you know, once you go to the festival, there's all these other little gold gems. And when you look back on it, the highlight may have been Laurie Fisher, or it may have been a coach that you'd never heard of, or it may have been you meeting a guy who's got a similar role to you, has similar challenges, and all of a sudden you've built this cool relationship, and you keep in touch, and you give each other ideas and challenge each other. And yeah, so that's what I want. Obviously, you learn from experts, and then there's the networking. But if we can establish long-term connections between coaches, from all parts of the world, that's how we're going to make the standard of coaching better.
No, it's a great review. I just wrote down the three people that influenced me the most at your conference. That one was Quinny. You can never, like, I just, the permission to throw grenades. I really enjoyed Jeremy Thrush because he's a rock star player, isn't he? But just his relationship with the kids was like outstanding. Like, I just thought he was super gentle. He asked great questions. He was. When I went up to him and said, "You're my favorite, like you've like really impacted me this week," he kind of looked at me like I was being weird, but I was being, I had to keep telling him like I'm not being weird. I thought it was awesome. And then James O'Connor, because like his experiences like should be a lesson to all of us. Like I watched him play at 17 at Hong Kong, and he was ridiculous. And And I've been thinking about it a lot, and I think there's loads of coaches around the world who'll be going, if only James had listened to me, if only he'd done what I said and stuck to my system, he'd have been a decent player, that James O'Connor lad. He'd have been like a world-class player.
But that's even like you think about that for James, like, and he's now feeling like he's being heard more and all of that. You just think, look, there's so much IP in our, and we try to say this as much as we can with our teams. How many coaches are here? No, there's not two coaches, there's 17 coaches, you know, and really trying to install the ability to peer coach and provide each other feedback. Now, we talk about players, we want our players to communicate more at training and on the field, blah, blah, blah. And we hear this all the time, but what are we actually doing to provide them with the skills that they need to know what to look for, how to provide feedback? What is feedback? All those little things that we can be doing to make sure we're as efficient on the grass as we can be is critical. Yeah.
I'm hearing there's a peer-to-peer carousel, and possibly a separate one, and a receiving feedback one, and all of that stuff. It's been a pleasure. I'm mindful of your time. If people want to reach out to you, where can they? Where's the best place to find you?
Probably my LinkedIn would be best. So just Sean Graham, SEAN, Irish spelling. Sharon. They were pretty impressive over the weekend, weren't
Yeah, they were. It's interesting. People are talking about how great Sean Edwards is. And obviously, I watched the Six Nations Full Contact, and I find it weird that the defence coach is swearing and telling everyone else how to attack. And I'm not saying he's not a good coach. And France have won one out of six knockout games, so they've won one Six Nations out of five. It'll be now, and they got knocked out in a World Cup quarter, and that appears to be very French. They might not quite have changed some of the mindset stuff and around how France compete in rugby. It was fascinating. I mean, that is a ridiculous French team. I think they're almost reliant upon one player, which is incredible, really, isn't it? I mean, he's a pretty good player, don't get me wrong.
That cool.
Mate, look, have a good one. Hopefully I'll get an invite back in 2025. My fingers are firmly crossed.
Absolutely. That's great.
And we'll catch up soon.
Yes. Good to chat.